we had when we are receiving a presentation on the Clarkson plan, which tentatively agreed that we should try and meet last Thursday or Tuesday, Tuesday later to have a follow-up briefing. And I did commit that I will try and ensure that if not Thursday, this day we have a briefing on the first and then by Friday, it was clear that it was going to be feasible to have a follow-up briefing on the first and then today. I did try to communicate as such to honorable members to indicate that as a result, we're going to have to continue with this item, which is the briefing on the strategic plan of the department. So, we will have to have a discussion about what we do with regard to the outstanding follow-up briefing. So, at this point in time, I would like to move on with this committee meeting to receive the strategic plan of the department. So, before we do that, let's see if we have any apologies from the secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson. The following apologies. Mrs. Farco, who is on leave, and then Mr. Lau is attending to some party matters, and then Mr. Tuama indicating that he will be joining us later. Chair.
The Deputy Minister, the members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity. The presentation is quite detailed. I know that you would want to interrogate the presentation, so allow me to ensure to be acting Director General of the honor to do the presentation, and then with the purpose of answering questions, I'll also ask Dr. Bonner to introduce the team. We have quite a sizable team on this point.
Honorable Chair, Minister, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, thank you for the opportunity. Minister, I'm going to ask if your permission to let each one of the members of the staff that is joining us today introduce themselves by name and position. Thank you.
My name is Nonsansan Bebele from Director and Office of Strategic
Plan. I'm sorry, I was disturbed by the 18 Director General.
Sorry, Honorable Chair, I'm Nonsansan Bebele from the Office of the Director General.
good morning, Minister and the receptionist, honorable members. My name is Rizamel Mambo. I'm the DDG for Nuclear Energy.
Good morning. My name is Lucas Mulauzi. I'm the Chief Director, Strategy and Risk Management.
Good morning, Chairperson members. My name is Yvonne Chetty, Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members of the Committee. Sidiso Makubela is my name. I'm the DDG responsible for petroleum regulation.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members. My name is Lloyd Gunter. I'm the Acting Chief Operating Officer.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister, and the members. My name is Ntokozi Mpofu. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General of Energy Programs and Projects.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister.
Good morning, Minister, Deputy Minister, and Chair of Member. My name is Karim Gavla, and I'm Minister of RPPS.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair, Minister. My name is Tandu Maimani, Head of Communication.
Good morning, Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members. My name is Eka Fulyu and I'm from the National Energy Regulator.
Good morning. My name is Brian
Opportunity. Chair and honorable members, I was listening to the officials when they introduced themselves, and I must apologize. I could see some of our colleagues from East Meadow in the corner. Couldn't hear them. I must say I'm surprised that I speak so softly today. So I'm not sure why it is, but at least I think you could hear me.
So, but thanks for the opportunity. Before we start, just one two things that I want to just in terms of the presentation. As you can see, it's close to 100 slides, and I think if we're going to go through the normal pace, we'll probably be up till late this afternoon. I think the importance that we need to share the crucial aspects around the APP, the strat plan, and the budget of the department. What I just want to point out, Honourable Chair members, is that your hard copies that you have received, these slight changes on the presentation that you'll see on the screen, there's some date mistakes, and I will point out those that have these four slides of such issues, headings that was different colours and fonts that we changed just to make it uniform, and also font sizes, and then, as you said, that's where there's some mistakes, but I'll point that out when I come to the specific slide 9, where these dates are correct. The way we're going to present the chairs, if it's your approval, if your approval, there's four sections. The one is the background to the department, then the one on the strat plan itself, and the third section is on the annual performance plan, ADP, and then the budget vote. So for the first section A, I want to do the overview of that, and then the various branches will then cover the strat plan as well as the APP, the branch measures that's here today, will then cover those respective branch overviews, and then end the CFO with the budget. If that is, that's your goal. Thank you very much. In the background, Chair and members, if you go to slide number 5, if you look at an emission, and as I mentioned, I'm not going to deal with each slide per item or per bullet. We've taken that decision read, but I think some aspects we need to highlight to make sure that we can bring in the essence of the latter part of the presentation. The first one is that the aim of the department, and it's a relatively young department, this started in 2009, it is then to formulate policies and to regulate various frameworks and legislations that deals with the energy environment we operate in, but to make sure that we have energy security in the interest of the day. And in doing that, we need to make sure that it's affordable, reliable, and sustainable supply of these energy carriers. If we, I'm going to skip the background second slide and then move into the various legislation that is governing the department and the energy sector in the country. And if you go to the, I think I've come to this 12 or so, that is the various acts that is somehow been the guiding legal framework that is giving direction and also then making sure that we fulfill the aim and vision of the department. If we then straight up and looking at the legislation to the next slide, that's slide 9 or 8, my apologies, and then a summary, the next two slides is a summary of the 8 bills that will be presented in the next year or two to Parliament, Cabinet Parliament, regarding some changes that will be proposed. Now, the first two, electricity regulation amendment bill and a energy regulatory amendment bill, have been dealt with extensively in terms of external processes, and it's going to go to Cabinet in the next month, then for submission to Parliament. The gas amendment bill is one that we are also working on, and it is proposed that by the second semester of this year, calendar year, that will be presented to Cabinet for consideration. Then the revised ESMU bill will also be resubmitted in July this year. If we move to the next slide, which is then the last four that we want to deal with. The first three is dealing with nuclear-related legislation. The first one is on the fund bill to ensure that the funding of the Nuclear Radiation Waste Management Institute is then being put in place, and that bill is being drafted currently. The next two are revisions of the current nuclear regulatory bill, and also the Nuclear Energy Act. The last one is then to formalize also the central strategic fuel fund and the interval that will be presented in the second part of this calendar year. Dave, I think in your notes, I think there was the next slide is just taking us to a high-level overview of what's the organogram of the department point out your seven branches. The next two slides is just in the description of what each branch consists of and its purpose. And then the slide number 1513 refers then to the number of positions that has been approved within the DOE structure. This has been the funded post and then the unfunded post. Now, as you members, is that your the structure of the department that has been approved allows for 847 positions. Unfortunately, we only have funds. We see funds for 630. So 227 are unfunded, and these can't be filled, which does create a quite a big challenge in delivering your task all the time. But if you then also put it in context that an average for vacancy rate between 8 and 10%, you add that to that, it means that your lack of full positions in the order of a third of your approved structure, which does mean that those that are in the structure need to pull their weight extra, and in some cases you need to also consider what can be done and what needs to be there's not enough hands to fulfill those tasks. We didn't move to the location of the department. We get a lot of questions around this, and we just want to share this also, except that we have the quarters of the department situated in Pretoria and Timber House, and we all have 9 regional offices in the various provinces. And I can just mention that how it originated is that while we were still the Department of Minerals and Energy, these offices were then shared by the Minerals Park. It was also, if you look to the location of those offices, you will find it is very much focused around where the mining focus of the country was. So, but unfortunately, there were some contracts being signed for the buildings, and we couldn't just evacuate this building. So in 6 of the 9 cases, we are still sharing offices with the DMR, but from this year onwards, we are moving out into our own buildings. Okay, Zimbabwe moves out, Western Cape moves out, Gauteng moves out, Rantish meeting, Mwanga is busy moving out, and the rest of the year, another 3 will move out, and next financial year, the rest. So that is just for background information, Honorable Chair. We're going to move to the strat plan itself. I think it's important if we, before starting with the strat plan, you can run a strat plan as an academic exercise and write a lot of nice deliverables and key indicators in it. But I think at the end of the day, you need to move from a basis of what is a challenge you have to address at a line function department. And right now, Honorable Chair, I think we all know that we have a couple of challenges in the energy space. And the first one is on the generation side, the generation capacity. I think it's important that when you deal with this topic, to also mention that there's a lot of emphasis on the now and current. But we as a line function department need to be at a long-term and our vision of long-term sustainability and security of supply. So the strict plan is aims also to develop to not only address what is the now, but also what is the policies and frames you need to put in place to ensure long-term stability. And I think that is really important that we do cognizance of that. And around the challenges, our challenges in terms of generation and capacity, and I think it's also shared with the committee last Tuesday, is around and the shift of is the fact that we have availability of installed capacity. There's 43,000 megawatts installed, but it's always available for various reasons. Some of it is due to the fact that there is on-time purchases, in some cases planned purchases. There's a drop in efficiencies of some of these generators that doesn't deliver what is on the
plate of the generator, and then also the availability of your fuel source, in some cases diesel. So that's on the short-term side that we have to address. In medium to long-term, I think it's important that the energy resource plan that has been approved and that has been part of our implementation part need to be, we follow the time frame in it, and also share some highlights around that later. But also we need to make sure that we address not only, as I said, the current, but the medium to long-term, what is on the horizon. So on the one hand, you have to look at what is the growth in demand of your natural growth of your customer base or the consumption base of your customers, but also you look at your quality and availability of your current fleet. And if you compare that, on the one hand, you will find that in the next 8 to 10 years, we will have to decommission a couple of our current existing power plants because of old age. They're getting out of efficiency limits where it makes sense to still have them up and running. So we need to make provision to replace those, and it's between 6,000 and 7,000 megawatts that will have to be decommissioned, and that needs to be replaced. And then on top of that, your growth. And then if you look at current build program, is that there's a couple of pumps currently. We know the Dupe and Cathedral that will come online in Angola. But also there's some other plants, such as the FICA plants that we're working on through the DOE process, as I referred to just later. So there's a couple of these plants that are being shipped in to make provisions for those that's going to move out. But it's not going to replace all of it, so we need to look at also replacing that. And that I will deal with the next slide. On the that's on the generation capacity item, Chair. If we look at the distribution side, and look at, sorry, to all those bullets, there's a mixture of this from an aging infrastructure can also be applying to generation side, but also just as well the distribution infrastructure. But we all know that we have all looking and keeping our eyes on the generation availability. But I think it just is important to also make sure that the last kilometer of line to our customers is definitely also secured. So this is not going to help us to have security of generation capacity, but there's not enough capacity and infrastructure to bring the energy to houses, cottages, and industries. And that's really important. We need to make sure about that. And also, Chair, I want to also pause you just also make reference to the fact that we find in the various publications and general communication comments on TV and radio, people referring these loosely to blackouts and power failures and load shedding. People just also need to just caution in the usage of those expressions. Blackouts is something we never had, and we're not planning to have blackouts in this country. You have load shedding and you have power failures, but the majority of our power failures, the ordinary consumer has been sometimes getting mixed up between load shedding and power failures, is caused on the distribution side, the latter part of the value chain of supplying electricity, on the low voltage and medium voltage side. So that's where a lot of the focus need to go, and also in terms of making sure that the backlogs and maintenance of those systems need to be up. Analysis that the department did a couple of months ago on the backlogs is in the 70 billion rands. That's going to bring it to a international secured state where you can say that you have you can secure that nothing on your distribution side will then cause you problems in the normal sense of work. That's a really other impact, and the low end of that is between 40 and 70 billion rands that you're going to need to normalize that in the next couple of years. It's the ones off because some of the infrastructure is say 25 years old, you know, you can have a 10-year lifespan out of them, so it's a part and parcel of that process. I think it's also important that if we look then to all of this, and means that if you talk about generation, you're talking about distribution infrastructure, there need to be new infrastructure needs to come online. New infrastructure means it will have a cost reduction. So that means you will get upper pressure on your cost, and then it's also filtered through to your tariff that will be charged. I think that's important to take comments there. As a department, that's what we are really wary of, and also in the plan. it's one thing, Honourable Chair, to receive proposals, say, this can solve your current or future energy problems or supply, but it also needs to look at sustainability, what is the cost of that. And I think we also need to take that into consideration in our planning. If we then look at there's a lot of new entrants and technologies that came online lately. Internationally, for a couple of years in Africa, the recent years, specifically around the renewable energy side, I know there's a lot of renewable energy in terms of wind and solar that come along on mega scale, but also on micro scale. And this is switching from a fossil fuel to renewable energy also has challenges for us as a country. And we're very proud to say that in the switch we already have 1,500 megawatts of renewable energy online on grid that supplies us in the country and assists us also to put us through this time where the supply demand is very narrow. I think there's other energy carriers that is modern that we haven't utilized effectively. Some of them are old, like for instance LP gas. That is not known as LP gas usage country, we use it very sparsely, but it's a huge opportunity to run out LP gas more and more for cooking, space heating, and that's a process that we also as a department are initiating also to take some demand on your peak demand away from electricity. But also other renewable energy such as your rooftop PVs, where there's a huge drive for that. I think it's also important that as a country where this is new, we need to learn from other countries. But also I think it's important that you also take cognizance of what is your current situation in the country. PV rooftops, for instance, as an example, is a solution, but it's also a silver bullet. I think we need to caution that there's two ways you can utilize it. It's just feed into the grid, or you can use that to store some electricity in batteries. It's a really expensive option, but it's workable. If you feed directly into the grid, it's much cheaper, but the disadvantage is twofold. One is that you feed in when it's sun, and that's when you have your daytime, and that's normally when your domestic usage is lower. So that has an element, but other issue I think that we need to also be cautious about is that the fact that if you do go far with your PV rooftop, and you specifically in the way our distribution system is run, that we're not causing too much pressure on our distributors, our municipalities and metros. If too many of our customers are going on to PV rooftops, it might mean that the infrastructure needed to be carried by the ones that can't afford it. And I think we also need to be cautious. We need to work out the model around that, and that's what we're busy doing. It's not the easy price to just roll it out and then eventually find out that the ones that can't afford it is ones that need to pay for excess of your service charge on your grid. That's to say, Honourable Chair, it's not to say we're not going there. I would say it's not easy just walking into darkness. We need to be cautious how we do it, and there's some discussions that have been funded purely that we have the views of the consumer as well as vis-à-vis the view of the distributors. There's also another renewable industries that we have not really utilized, it's biogas. There's a huge opportunity in biogas, but we're struggling in this country to get it accepted. The resistance, like with LP gas, is a resistance from our consumers. It's a process we need to go through to convince our customers that this also option. And the way to do it is you need to also run many more pilots, and that's what you're also planning to run. One more something that it's just to deal with some of the efforts, and I'm going to ask Mr. Makubala to deal with the issues around the petroleum products and the volatility of prices recently. So over to you, Noel, and then after that I'm going to ask Mr. Jacob Mbena to deal with some of the energy efficiency demand management challenge. Over to you.
Chair, through you. Thank you, Gigi. Just quickly on the volatility of petrol prices or fuel prices, I think that we have to accept that volatility will be with us for quite a while. currently the predictions are that we can see anything on the crude oil price between, you know, at the top end, $75 this year, but at the bottom end, we could still see $30 a barrel for Brent crude. Now, what that means is that we are going to have to get used to the prices going up and down. Prices of petrol, diesel, LPG, and so on going up and down. Because what we do as price takers, we check the market. And that is what we do. So our pricing system is based on import parity pricing. And as such, whatever the market prices are at the import destination, basically those prices will filter into our fuel price system. One caution at this stage is that in the upcoming months, I think people may see an increase in fuel prices, but even those will still end up with us paying less than what we were paying in April of 2014. In April of 2014, we were paying in counting 14 rand 39 per liter of petrol. Currently we are at 11.27, and even if we add the levy that has been decided through the budget process, we will still end up below the 14.39 that we experienced last year. In fact, currently what we are paying are prices well below what we were paying in April of 2012. So perhaps I think I can just leave it there for now, just to say that there are geopolitics currently that are going to have an impact on the pricing of petroleum going forward. I think the talks that are ongoing in Geneva are going to have an impact on crude oil prices going forward. How the situation, for example, in Mexico unfolds in as far as the exploration and production there. And I think lastly, a geopolitical situation that could swing things is also the situation in Venezuela. Thanks, TJ. I will leave it there for now.
Thank you, TJ. With regard to energy efficiency, the challenges manifest themselves in three strategic areas. The first one being take up is, say for example, the solar water heater program that was meant to address the issues of demand reduction. We find that because the expectation of the consumer has to contribute certain amounts, you know, to the subsidy, the take up is not as much as it was expected, and the impact of the soldier is less than what they would like it to be, especially with the current electricity challenge. So the second point is actually the impact, which is lower than what is expected, and that is the result of one of the things being the take up, the second thing being the sustainability of the program. I mean, we all know that the department rolled out a number of CSL previous ago, and experience has been that after a while, when this also people just go back to the options that are being in the market. So basically, they take up the impact of the program and the sustainability of the program has been one of the challenges that the department is really looking at the program. In a nutshell,
thanks,
Ben.
Okay, so some of the other challenges as listed is, for instance, your access to energy. Now, there's different aspects. The one is that we all think it's only with access to electricity, and that's one aspect, and we'll deal with that, but also access to petroleum products. We have a huge challenge in our rural areas where our petroleum companies are not always so willing to build fuel stations in deep rural areas, because it's all about the volume of petroleum prices that you can pull. And this is why we're also to the department have started the initiative, which is called Intergrid Centres, where we, in collaboration with the different retail companies in the country, have been rolled out a couple of these energy centres, which caters not only for the molecules, the petroleum products, but also for other energy aspects. But that's part of the commitment to the South African public in terms of where there's low volumes that are still going to have the customer can have access. And there's around about 10, 12 of them now that we have run out of each year. You will also see our FPV estimation of average of 2 per year that we facilitate and build in per year in different rural areas in the country. Access to electricity, it's known that our electrification program over the last, from 1912 to now, have ensure 06 million households to receive electricity, because electricity mostly. And that program is still running strongly. We have a master plan around that to ensure that we have universal access by 2025. And we keep up with each year to make sure that we have that number that we need to be per year to be connected today. And it's also important, for talking about new technologies, that we can't carry on with the grid extension. Something is not financially viable. Hence, we're moving to other technologies such as solar PV panels, which at this point in time, 90,000 households in Africa have been supplied with that in rural areas. We also, honorable chair members, is the first country in the world that utilized fuel cells to do rural electrification, urban semi-urban electrification. That is a program that for government is very important because it has also not only the access part support, but also the potential economic part of it. But the challenge is still the question of you need to bring these energy carriers to areas where it's difficult to reach, and also in terms of infrastructure, always the if you want to develop this electricity access. So that's a program that is crucial to the industry, and which is also challenge us that we need to make sure we have secured access to all citizens in the country. I think it's also important that in the whole aspect, and then you're looking at the department itself, it's a budget baseline reduction that has been implemented throughout the government, which also has an effect on others in the department. The baseline has been dropped, and I don't want to take that part away from my CFO. She will share that with us a bit later. There are some challenges on which our members, which we need to highlight in terms of the strat plan and the APP. Ensure that we identify what I listed here, if not all the challenges, but just it's a highlight of the majority of what is of importance, which then is the basis for our strat plan and our APP development. If we then can move, before we're going to go to the specifics of the strat plan, the fact that I think if you have the chance, and the best challenges that is facing you, you can ask yourself the question now, how to solve it, what is the way to solve it. And I think for us, as hard as energy, we don't have to look too far. We have, if you can recall, at 17 June 2014, the Honourable President Zuma, as well as the State of the Nation address of 12 February, make it very clear that energy is been identified as the key infrastructure item that is required to ensure that we start our economy. So a whole development of our strat plan was refocused to make sure that we have the fed risk. And if you go through the State of the Nation address, these are the very key directions that's been given by the Honourable President in terms of short, medium, long-term aspects, not only in terms of supply, but also the emissions of energy, not only electricity, but the petroleum side also, also renewable energy. And I have the copy of the speech, which we then use as also our direction. So this, to address this economic challenge of the country, we need to do it via ensuring the security supply of electricity.
And what we did is then as a partner to identify for ourselves, because you look through the strap and you find there's under 20 key indicators. And that makes it really difficult for the partner to keep it focused. So what we did is to bring that into some key focal priorities, and we identified 7 which overarching. The one is electricity supply. And under electricity supply, there's various aspects. It's all factors that is ensuring electricity supply. From your renewable energy gas that we're going to go to, and I will share with you some, the current build programs, nuclear, and also imports from hydro, generation from industries that have their own generation, co-generation, and also municipal generation. On that, in terms of where we need to this focus, number one is electricity supply. I think it's important also that we just highlight some of the programs that we come to with on electricity supply, because sometimes only focusing on is no supply, what are you doing to supply electricity. But just want to highlight some of them. On the cogeneration side, now I emphasize these two cogeneration processes. One is where ESCOM has contracts with cogenerators, which is expiring in the next couple of days. We certainly now re-sign that process we have dealt with, and they will sign probably this week or so. But what we're talking about is part of the determination of security support. We also go out on a generation of 800 megawatts, which will be by the end of this month, RFP will be published. It will run for a couple of weeks, and then we will make an announcement of the preferred bidders by August this year, and by March to May 2016, we will get legal and financial closure. So I thought I should share that with you. It's a press release. You will see in the newspapers that will come out as a request for proposals on the cogeneration room for an 800 megawatts. That is in addition to the contracts that the ESCOM is signed, because we did the RFI last year to make analysis of what's out there, and we found it's actually each capacity that is currently being offered. Yes, we need to balance between what is the infrastructure that I have available to link up to the middle, but also in terms of the cost that I can, the price that I can bring it in. In terms of the gas imports, I think we just need to also talk about electricity, diversification and energy mix that we're talking about. Gas will play a much bigger role in the future. That is your normal LNG gas, but also unconventional gas. And I think there's so much resources that we have. And that's, we also, these 3,100 megawatts we determined, which will split between the classical LNG, natural gas, and then also your unconventional gas, your methane gas, your gas that's associated with your coal plus. Now, the RFI for that will be issued by the end of April this year. Then to test the OPEC and what is in the market, and our plan is by orbiting to issue the bids for RFP. And then to go through the full normal process that the industry gets used to, how we do our RFPs, is to get out on the submit their proposals by beginning of the next year, we expect them to be in, and then by middle half of 2016 to have financial closure. The legal closure at the end of the year, financial closure, 2016. So that's on gas. If you look at coal, we have also issued RFP in December last year for 2,500 megawatts of coal. Those emissions is closing in June this year, and we hope to make an announcement by August this year around that, and then to have financial closure by 2016 second semester. That's the supply. The other issue I think I just need to share also is that there's already the so-called eco-generators that UEF have secured, which is currently in construction. Two of them, one in it's called the DISA in Kruger outside of Nostradana Metro, 360 megawatts, but then also one in outside of the Shaka airport is called Shaka Crown. I think 630 megawatts. Those will finish by the end of this year, early next year. So those are gas, strong diesel vehicles that can also be used as a heavy beast. It's not part of the ESCOM generation fleet, the IP, so they sell in when it's needed. So I just want to share this other supplies that they are not being currently being put out for interest, call interest, already being called for things. But as a supplier, we also need to look at the demand side. It's one thing to say you need to supply, but we need to be on the demand side also. There's a lot of action going there. My colleague made reference to the classical solar geysers, the energy efficiency products that's usually been driven now by various entities also. Tax rebates at 12L, tax rebates that's available. But I think it's also probably these other technologies that's out there that we haven't utilized effectively that can be used. And we have also, January this year, put out a request for registration for technologies and entities to supply us with demand side management technologies. We can optimize your grid in a very smart way to then that way save a lot of capacity. These talk of even up to between 600 and 800 megawatts, depending on the technology and how far down the grid you implement. That can be done relatively easy, and your infrastructure is limited, so that means you require not a generator, you just need electronic equipment and some hardware to manage. So that's we got the bit closer. This will be August this year, and we hope that by the end of this year we can have the contracts in place for those successful bidders. So just for in the key priorities on the supply side, just give a glimpse of what is currently in place on top of what you're going to see in the strata and the IPP. But the plan gas is another key priority area. I'm not going to deal with too much. There's a lot of activities you also see, which we together with a lot of other entities are involved with. You can't talk about this if not addressing efficiency and effective usage of utilization of the energy. That's including not only the way you utilize your electricity, but also that you have to pay for your electricity. You have to make sure that theft of the hardware as well as theft of electricity need to be controlled. That's all for among others I've covered. Launching your policy and legislation is important to put all of this in context. We also have identified, and we will share with you the six SOEs that's reported to the department. The oversight of those SOEs is very critical. I think we need, as a department and government, need to focus very strongly, and we make that as one of our key priorities, is that our oversight on our SOEs. But then one aspect that we are struggling, not only as government, but the whole industry, is shortage of skilled, trained staff or employees. And we want to start, and we have started already, with a targeted train. I think it's been too long. We have sent a lot of our staff members in very strained facilities, but it wasn't done in a coordinated fashion. The country also. If we reach and we know where direction we're going to go into, make sure that we have in time the right skilled individuals, groups, send them up, two by two. Then we send out a group of students to be trained in various facilities abroad on specific energy aspects, from the petroleum refinery right through to aspects of shale gas or what in between. I think it's also important that one thing that we as a department are lacking is our communication. We do not communicate effectively with our stakeholders, with our community, our shareholders and stakeholders outside. If you open up the newspaper, magazine, technical, popular magazines on your popular communication platforms, it's all negative stuff. We don't always get the effect of some positive aspects that get to that place. But such as I just mentioned, 1,500 megawatts of green electricity generated by 32 wind and PV plants, big technology in the world. The first country in the world that has fuel cells used for rural electrification. O100 program has been regarded as one of the best in the world, the way you run. You can off from cell phone buy access to your solar power. Stuff like that is not and partly we to blame the department. That's why we all identify this as a critical aspect of our way to go forward. That's the background and where we need to identify where the strat plan and the IPP is going to be focused from, what is the baseline that we're going to move from. I just want to end off by saying, in a lighter note, one thing that we learned as a part of energy lately, Honourable Chair, is that there's a lot of expert in energy that is spinning all over the country. And it's funny how you get some really trained solutions, invitations, proposals that's coming our way, and full difference of this data. Please just come to my garage and I'm going to show you how we're going to solve the energy crisis in the country forever. So we as an department also need to make sure we don't miss some of the modern technologies that are developed somewhere. But the majority of the PLC is really not for commercial application, unfortunately. But we are looking at those sorts of things. One should say that not only what we do on the planning side, but also on the there's a lot of activity and excitement around energy. But we need to change the way we're dealing with energy, how we protect the energy, and make sure that we can bring confidence back into this energy space. I'm going to ask now the respective branch managers, some of them are dealing with some of them as communities, to deal with the respective program. With your indulgence, Chair, the first program is Program 2, Energy Policy and Planning, which really will take us through. Chair, thank you very much.
Thanks for that, thank you, PG. In terms of
who is that?
The branch.
funds.
For the parish hotel unit, a number of strategic objectives and targets are identified in response to the challenges and the priorities that we identified here, and also in line with the government's medium-term strategic framework. The strategic objective is to improve energy security, and energy security improvement is through regulating demand. Some of the options in addition to the options that we already know of in terms of demand management include EPS things such as switching some of the energy used to other energy sources such as GP. The department is currently doing some work about that protection area for rain. It's going to take a while, but it's a work in progress. The second part around is has to do mostly with generating energy generation capacity, and the ACDG has already indicated a number of things already in place, such as the whole IGP, the co-gen that will be coming out soon together with the RMI program, the renewable program, project that we've already rolled out. And in the long run, we're working on other options such as the hydro. So those are the strategic plan for the department. But in order to unlock these, we also do work in terms of the different things that are required, such as the integrated energy plan, the IRP, the gas utility master plan, the strategic development plan, which will be done by the format, we have very close to do that. We've also recently updated our assessment of the difference of the federal of different distribution infrastructure in the country that we have not run out in the next 2 years to continue with the development. The second strategic option talks, the strategic objective talks to the improvement of liquid fuel energy security by implementing the liquid fuel master plan. Work in this area is also underway and rolled out over a number of years. The other strategic objectives talk to the objectives that I've already mentioned, which is basically around policy review. We've also already stated earlier that in terms of policy review, we take into two of our bills, which is the National Energy Regulator Bill and the Electricity Amendment Bill, through the process to make changes in order to, for the regulator basis, to make regulation more efficient and with regard to the GRI electricity regulation amendment bill, is to make sure that we create an environment that is conducive for investment in the generation field. We have already indicated we also reviewing the distribution infrastructure and block. But one of the other big things that we're doing as part of the strategic objective is to establish a mechanism to pre-fund several and create a smooth track path over a long term from an investment point of view. So I think some of the objectives are actually the same objective that I've addressed. So in summary, I would actually want to
this one is on the energy policy and planning, that slide 24. And, it's petroleum, so yeah. That will be Mr. Makabala.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Perhaps let me just start by introducing the petroleum regulation branch. That's the work that we do. I start by saying that currently it excludes oil and gas upstream regulation. It also excludes shale gas regulation. These, in terms of existing laws, fall under, reside with the mineral resources portfolio. So everything else we do, but not upstream oil and gas regulation. We see our role, Chairperson and honorable members, as an enabler of economic development in our country. That's first and foremost, that's what drives us. Secondly, the cost of human activity, sometimes referred to as the cost of doing business, but we also know that there are motorists and other people that use petroleum products. So that is at the center when we make decisions on petroleum regulation. Thirdly, the issue of accelerated, equitable orderly participation of all South Africans in this sector drives what we do. The last matter amongst the issues that we consider, which is not the least, is national interest. So those are some of the matters that we are seized with when we make decisions in this bank. I've spoken earlier to the volatility of the fuel prices. That will remain with us going forward, as I indicated. One matter that I did not include in that intervention was the fact that the decision that got taken in the United States with regard to the Keystone pipeline is also going to play a role in how future oil and gas prices developed. In the country currently, what we are seized with is aging infrastructure in the petroleum space. And our refinery, which is known, has been around for a number of years, so they even need to look at what we do in that regard. The National Development Plan was very clear that there's got to be a consideration of all options and a decision on what happens in as far as the refining capacity has got to be taken by 2070. So we're seized with those matters. But also I need to indicate that there have been developments positive in this regard, taking into account that we have this aging infrastructure. NEFRA has approved import facilities that will import petroleum products in the country. And these, for example, one in the Nelson Mandela Bay Metro, one here in Cape Town, which is the subject of some, being opposed in certain quarters, so on, the subject of some discussion, policy discussion. And then there are others in the Richards Bay area that have also been approved. In our view, these will, to a large extent, increase the security of supply of liquid fuels into our country going forward. We, on a daily basis, have to make sure that the 27 billion liters of petroleum products that goes through in this country reaches its destination on a daily basis. That is what
we are saved. Of course, the 27 billion is an annual figure, and the calculations can be done on the daily movement of that fuel. Lastly, by way of introduction, it is important that when we do all of this, we are able to sustain the work that we do into the future. So we are constantly building a cadre of professional regulators. We have partnerships with the players in the petroleum sector itself, the retailers, are training some of the junior staff that are joining us. The petroleum companies are doing that themselves. We are working closely with the stakeholders to look at the possibility of having a petroleum institute in one of the universities. As the acting DG has indicated, we're also looking at sending some of our colleagues to institutions in countries such as Malaysia, Norway, France, and so on. Now, in terms of what we will be focusing on, basically, next slide, focusing on this year, very importantly for us is compliance. We've seen tendencies of non-compliance. For example, retailers who don't change petrol prices at a time when, for example, there are decreases, they maintain prices of the previous month. So in this regard, we have inspectors that go out. We'll be strengthening those inspections. We expect to conduct 1,200 inspections in the coming period. But also linked to that, we want to enhance the fuel quality monitoring program. So we will then make sure that as part of the inspections that are conducted, we take samples of fuel to make sure that what is claimed by retailers as going into our vehicles is exactly per specification. We have in the past year detected a few cases of fuel that is not compliant with specification, and those matters are being dealt with. The other one is clamping down on those who operate without licenses. There is no reason at this stage for anybody to be operating in this sector without a license. And in this regard, we're looking to strengthen our cooperation with the law enforcement agencies. Also, in the area of compliance, very important, the theft of fuel. Again, this is a criminal matter. We basically will be looking to strengthen our cooperation with the law enforcement agencies. Secondly, on transformation, we look to strengthen this area in the coming period to ensure that, particularly in the retail space, we look to ensure that the number of historically disadvantaged services that operate in this space. There is a correction that is taking place. However, it is not fast enough. On the wholesale side, there has been significant progress, I must report, and we are seeing a number of wholesalers actually operating, some even graduating to import on behalf of the oil majors. Lastly, on the transparent pricing framework, now it's important for me to indicate here that on a daily basis, South Africans can see what the under-recovery or over recovery on the price of petrol and diesel is on a daily basis. There is a website of the Central Energy Fund that we can make available here. There you can actually see that in the next month we are likely to see a decrease or an increase, but that you can see on a daily basis. And that is published. So we will be looking to further strengthen this and by implementing regulatory accounting system. I must conclude, Chair, by indicating that in the next month, as things stand, we will see one of the biggest increases in fuel for quite a while. And that will be a once-off, but it is going to be quite significant. And it is all because of the movements in the crude oil price recently, but also importantly, it is what is usually referred to as spring break in the U.S. and North America. So it is the beginning of some driving season. So what then tends to happen is that the prices of petroleum products, because of the demand, shoot up. However, we believe that they will stabilize. But what happened is that in preparation for the summer season in the Northern Hemisphere, refineries then shut down. They go on a maintenance shutdown so that they are able to supply fuel when the driving season starts in the Northern Hemisphere. So what tends to happen at this time is that there's a squeeze on their product demand because some refineries are out of commission in the Northern Hemisphere. And that is going to have an impact on just the following month. However, I believe that we will see stability going forward. Taking into account, though, the volatility that I indicated. Thank you very much.
Sure, the next program four, any programs and projects is Mr. Mpofu will take us through those in a couple of slides.
Thanks, Mr. Teacher. Program four, we have placed the mandate of ensuring that programs and projects that the department carries out that are focusing on access to energy are done in a coordinated effort, and also we ensure that those projects must be sustainable in the long run. We are also institutionalizing project management within the branch, given the amount of money that we are tasked to manage for the implementation of the program and process, as well as in the area of procurement where the department is involved, including the ICP program that is being run under the auspices of the Department of Energy. We are also ensuring that those projects happen in a coordinated manner and with a particular focus in ensuring that compliance is adhered to, because obviously there is a lot at stake for the country with regard to what we want to achieve out of those programs. The issue that I would like to touch on would be the issue of socio-economic development. That is the issue that we focus on, so that we ensure that the country gets its fair share of value from those projects that we get to implement. Therefore, it is critical that we manage those projects and report accordingly. In the IA program, are also guided by the electrification roadmap, which basically was approved by cabinet. That is basically its main focus to ensure that universal access to energy is achieved countrywide. We therefore have to manage that problem tightly, given that we interact with the various stakeholders, including ESCOM and municipalities. Therefore, project management becomes key, given the variety of skills level that we deal with, considering that there are mentors which probably, by and large, know what they are doing. They've got a level of skills, you know, to the degree that we expect, but also we've got some struggling municipalities that we still have to handhold and assist them a great deal towards achieving their own objectives. So basically, as the energy programs and project branch, we are basically, as I mentioned earlier, institutionalizing the project management to ensure that end-to-end, the project management principle is understood by all the stakeholders, to ensure that the money that we disperse is managed in an effective manner, and ensure that we basically reach the goals that we set for ourselves. In also, there is a program that Dr. Banner spoke with, where we introduced energy services in rural communities through the IEC Integrated Energy Standards Program. We are going to be relooking at that program to see how we can make it more effective than what it is currently, because we would like to ensure that even people in the more rural of areas within the country, basically we achieve a state of utopia with regard to energy services, you know, so that the gap is reduced between the people that are living in the urban areas and those in the rural areas, to ensure that the energy services that we are getting accustomed to in the cities, they are almost the same as those that get accorded to the people in the most rural of our country. Having said that, we will then be re-looking at those models to basically see whether can we get a better model of ensuring that energy access is attainable countrywide. Obviously, we'll be looking at those ISCs that are performing well to see how then do we take lessons from those to ensure that we influence this new strategy. I think Chairperson, that basically I would like to stop it at that, and obviously we'll then deal with other matters in the APP itself.
Sure, the next program, Program 5, will be clear, and that will be Mr. Bondo.
Can we talk about it? We need to break before you do it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson's presentation will be on nuclear, and as I mentioned before the little break, there is going to be Mr. Mbambo. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Objectives. One of our strategic objectives is to improve nuclear safety, nuclear security, and we do this through updating the current legislation, making sure that it aligns with the international practices that are already set. In terms of our 5-year target, we will be promulgating the National Nuclear Regulatory Act amendments. We'll also be promulgating the Nuclear Energy Act, and also a promulgation of the Radioactive Waste Management Funding, as already been discussed by the acting DG. The main focus in terms of these legislations is to ensure, in particular the NRF and the Nuclear Energy Act, these legislations have been in existence for more than 10 years, and so we are making sure that we are amending legislation to take into account the current developments in the nuclear energy sector. In terms of the fund bill, this is a bill that will ensure that there is sustainable funds for the and RADI, which is the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, to sustain its operations as well as also to make sure that it provides funding for future nuclear liabilities. And when it comes to the second strategic objective, we have to make sure that we strengthen the control of nuclear material and equipment through enforcement of the relevant legislation or regulation, as well as updating the framework that we apply within which to manage these materials. Our strategic objective number three is to improve the security of energy supply. The SDG spoke about one of our key strategic focus in the department is the electricity supply. This is where we fit quite closely in that one, in terms of this strategic objective. What we need to do is that we have to contribute towards the security of supply by making sure that we lead and we oversee the implementation of the nuclear energy expansion program guided by the department policy as well as the decisions of the NDC squad. And we have to do this to make sure that we align with the current integrated resource plan, which is the 20-year electricity plan for 2010 to 2030. And these are our 5-year targets, which I will not elaborate because we are union and when we deal with the transition. Then the next strategic objective is to contribute. The next one will be objective number 4, 5.4, wherein we recognize that we need to create awareness in terms of the application of the technology. The main objective there, we want to ensure that there is an awareness of the nuclear technology, as well as we make sure that we present a balanced view around the applications and as well as the issues that we consider for this particular aim.
The next and the last one for the strat plan session is on clean energy, and Mr. Baker from Clear will do that for us. Thanks.
Thank you. In terms of clean energy branch, the purpose of clean energy branch is to manage the potential development and implementation of clean and renewable energy initiatives, energy efficiency, demand side, as well as coordinate climate change initiatives within the energy sector. The program has got three sub-programs, energy efficiency, renewable energy, and climate change, and energy regional authority. In terms of the strategic objectives of the branch, the first one is to coordinate and monitor the implementation of energy management management policy and environmental compliance. The main objective statement is basically developing and implementing energy management management for strategic and environmental management plan and making sure that these plans are published. In terms of the 5-year target, the target is to ensure that what is related to ERP is implemented and the National Energy Efficiency Action Plan is updated and stable for the next consideration. The second strategic objective is to coordinate the implementation of energy efficiency and demand side emission measures across all sectors. This is done in terms of making sure that the five-year target is to make sure that there are energy consumption baselines for a number of municipalities, specifically here about 100 municipalities, and to develop and implement the post 2050 energy efficiency target strategy. The third strategic objective is effective renewable energy, and this basically is to ensure that the international energy into the mainstream energy supply of Africa. We plan and coordinate interventions after the development of the market in the renewable energy through facilitating incorporation of renewable energy technologies into the integrated energy plan and other key energy policies. The 5-year target, they indicate some of the additional initiatives in addition to the big renewable energy program that the department is rolling out. That's it.
That completes the various programs with respect to the strategic plan for the next 5 years. And we then review the 1 year, 15-16 annual performance plan, APP, for respective branches. So can we continue with this, or I just summarize this, Honorable Chair? Can I ask the team to continue?
Thereafter continue for our strategic planning session. So at this point, we'd like to leave honorable members an opportunity to ask questions on the plan. And as soon as we're done with the questions on the strategic plan, adjourn. And then we convene next Tuesday to continue. Let's see how far we go with the question. It's quite possible that by the time we are here and then honorable members take with the questions that we posed to the department. So can we take questions? We're not supposed to ask questions today. If there are no pressing questions, you can wait and finish. Another Pandale. You say now I don't need a business card. Another Pandale. Who's next? Another SJM. Another Masala. Honorable Mahai, Honorable Shell, that's all. Thank you very much.
Honorable
Phrases like user pay and cost reflective tariffs, and this, you know, is the main reason why they give for implementing e-tolls. I know e-tolls don't fit here, but I just mentioned it, that this cost reflective tariffs and the user pay principle is one of the main priorities of government. But on the other hand, people are allowed to enrich themselves off the back of the poor of South Africa with not much benefit to this country. And yes, again, I'm talking about the BHP bulletin and the special pricing agreements that NAFTA has no control over, because if they did, they would adjust the price. And they're not doing that because, you know, they say there are these contracts in this. Why are we allowing this country to suffer economically to the extent that we have a junk status rating? So we want to repeat my suggestion that they use 10% of South Africa's electricity. That's what we need, more or less. So we should shut them down, mothball them, and, you know, pay rather the fines for the couple of years that they are down. I think it still will be cheaper than this country and the fallout that we would face if we have a national blackout. And Mr. Barna says that you mustn't use these words haphazardly, that we can have a national blackout on the grid. But my information is that if we don't do something drastically, it's going to happen here. And it's a prediction I want to make. Maybe at the end of the year you will tell me I was wrong, I'll apologize. But I think that this will be a situation too ghastly to contemplate. And I want to urge you to really, you know, we need to do that drastic things. People can't just say, well, you know, it's just a small little glitch or a small problem. It's a catastrophe that will happen, and we are going to suffer for this. And what happens if the power goes off and we have this national blackout? It is said that it will take 2 weeks to start up the grid again. You know, when the grid goes down, we don't have water either. The water pump will stop. Everything will stop. Without electricity, we will reach a tipping point in South Africa where we will not be able to return from. I want to lay that at your heart and ask you what you will be doing, that is drastic measures to improve the situation. And I was thinking that we would be seeing some of this in the plans that comes to this portfolio committee. And then we have we talk about the fuel prices. You know, I have information that we are procuring, and I read also the newspaper in on Sunday, that we are procuring diesel for our open cycle gas turbines, which use diesel. The company, the name I have of is Women of Africa. And the delivered rate of this diesel is about 16 rand a litre to the generators. Keep in mind that the diesel price is not regulated like the petrol price by NERSA. We are in crisis, and we are paying such exorbitant prices. The price is blown up in the name of BEE. I'm sure that it was never the intention to uplift some people out of poverty, and on the other side, dooming the rest of the country into deeper poverty by the consequences, the unintended consequences of this policy. What is Eskom paying per liter of diesel today? If it's not 16 rand, what is it? I would like to know that. And what is happening to the rebate? I don't know, if Eskom buys electricity, they don't use the road or the road taxes. So they should get a rebate. Who is getting this rebate? And why are you not regulating the diesel price? Is there a specific reason for that? I mean, I think that you should be regulating it, because, I mean, everybody is asking different prices. If I drive by the petrol station, I can see people have a different price. So you have to drive from petrol station to petrol station to get the best price. I don't think that is right. Then I want to turn to page 62, my attention to the risk management of the nuclear part, which is of great concern to me. I mean, I read here that we want to improve nuclear security, and then
And then some of the risks that are given is that we are unable to account for nuclear material in the country, that we have a vulnerability to security breaches, theft of nuclear material, this will result in changes by international communities, material falling into the wrong hands. Now, what is now in place at this moment to stop a further terrorist attack on Pelindaba, like we saw in 2007, when two teams of terrorists, in coordinated and a military fashion, they breached the security and penetrated deep into the facility. It is said to be a minor burglary by authorities, and Dr. Minty, who is our special strategic nuclear advisor in America, and there is a secret report that indicates that they actually came very close to stealing what they came for, which is our weapons-grade plutonium that is held at the Pelindaba. Now, you know what is worse? Is that nobody was arrested for this. Who was it that did it? Nobody knows. What their intention was? Nobody knows. Nobody was arrested. How can this happen at a facility that is housing our weapon-grade uranium, and then, we don't even know why they came, or why we are saying that we don't know why they came. Dr. Minty says we can't, only think they stole some computers or something at the time. But I mean, I don't believe that. I don't believe two teams of terrorists would go to a place and steal a computer. That just doesn't make sense. Why would they do that? I would like to know. And then I would like to ask the minister, I would like to ask the minister if she's aware of the Nupen-Lebatsi and the Pasadi Track 2030 report, which deals with the disastrous fishing right allocation over which she presided. The findings are, and I quote, "We found the reason for the collapse of the process to be political apathy and a lack of direction and of leadership."
Not even related to energy. Some of them are now coming in with theft and all other issues, and now we are coming into agriculture, we are going into fisheries. Can we guide it by a good chairperson to be strategic in our approach to this meeting and in the question that we ask? I beg your indulgence. And also, can you also give direction to this meeting around the questions that we are going to ask? We can't be on a marathon of questions. We are honorable members here. This local committee is made up of 13 members. We need to all ask our questions. So we can never give one speaker to go on a marathon of questions and not give ourselves, as honorable members, time to ask our questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I was just getting to the question part. And then I just wanted to know there's some part I will skip. And then how will we ensure that this does not or could not occur in this department? And that this department also does not, is not run down like the fisheries department with catastrophic effect at the moment for this country. Thank you very much.
Another one. No, I'm not a good honorable. Honorable Pandar, I appreciate your questions. I'm afraid that it's going to be those type of questions and the general life. It's going to make it very difficult for this committee to function. I appreciate the questions. I'm told all the answers. I just want to raise that matter. No, I don't want an answer now. I know how to deal with that. I just want to raise it at this point. I know how to deal with it. I just want to raise it at this point that I'm concerned, but it's an issue we can deal with. Honorable SSN.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister. I'm going to work from the way back, clean energy. I'm going to know, also with NERSA. At some point, I really don't know how NERSA justified their existence, really, because everything that NERSA got, the fuel pipeline from Durban that was started, I don't know, when Yannis Mats was still a corporal, it's still not completed. It was approved for about 12 billion rand, and it ran up to 23 billion rand, etc., etc. I can just carry on without NERSA, actually. But NERSA is on an advisory committee for IPP as well, so I'm really the independent power for people. And they are, there's no access to the grid for IPP producers. Petroleum was, I think, the second one. I also got a concern with the diesel. So there was very disturbing details in the newspaper how Eskom gets the diesel, and I don't want to elaborate on that, you know, from dentists and dentitions and things, which is not acceptable, you know. We owe this country, this oversight committee, an explanation that we can't oversee that this thing go right, really, then we also doesn't justify our existence. My other concern is also the lack of transparency. I'm very happy to see the minister here today. I've actually forgotten what she looks like already. On nuclear, we need to know if the government is going to spend trillions of rand on nuclear power stations. If the president is telling the Eskom cannot reliably operate a coal-fired power station, it is very unlikely, Chair, that the International Atomic Energy Atomic Energy Agency would ever grant Eskom an operating license for new nuclear power stations, and it's a concern to us and to everyone, I think. Households just cannot afford the ever-increasing cost of electricity and water anymore. I've made notes all over the chair, sorry. I don't want to have a marathon session like it was mentioned. Dr. Barnard mentioned when he started off, we never had any blackouts, we had load shedding and things. Dr. Barnard, I must just say that we never, might never have had blackouts, but we were on the verge of having a total blackout in this country in December and January. And we all know that that is the truth. Thank you, Chief.
Yes, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister. Mine, Chair, is related to the department itself. I might not ask a marathon of questions here. It's related to, in fact, to the minister with regard to the 18th issue. When are we going to have the Director General, not the 18th issue forever? Because as far as I know, this matter was defeated with us, I think, for the past 12 months or so. So can I get a clarity with regard to that, Honorable Chair? The other one, Chair, relates to the Architects Training Department and sector SOEs. Which are those SOEs? If the department has not had an answer, I appreciate it to get an answer by next week, maybe. The other one, Chair, relates to the inspectors that oversee the compliance of the transfer stations. There was in my area where I come from, there are some deep rural areas where there are filling stations that operate 24 hours, but they are very old. By the look of things, they sell a liter of personal more than what we're saying. So is there any measures that can these people penalize or be arrested or maybe be fined for something that maybe the department can work out just with how much can these people pay, because maybe they might be taking some advantages that there is a rural area, so there is no any other person who can come from whatever to check on them as to whether are they complying or not. That is a very serious matter. The last one, Chair, is a marathon of questions. Yeah, let me pause there. Thank you.
As long as they are understood, please. Okay. Honourable Makai.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'd like to first welcome the Minister to the committee. It's a pleasure to actually see her at committee. We hope we see her for far more often. And I just wanted to address four questions to the Minister with relation to what is discussed in today's plan. The first and foremost is a clarification on the RP 2013 scrapping. I note on page 22 of today's report there is a reference to an updated ILP plan for 2015 on page 22. I'm interested just to understand if the Minister could provide us with an insight as to why the 2013 update was scrapped, particularly since it was seen as a far more accurate assessment of demand and supply of energy in South Africa, and it specifically had a very strict stipulation on nuclear, which stated that we should not pursue nuclear if we could not bring it in under $6,500 per megawatt, which seems unlikely in the current climate. And therefore, it makes pertinent points around the pricing path of electricity in South Africa, which is a significant issue, Chair, because although the department has done very well in expanding access to electricity, the one key thing we cannot forget is access is one thing, but affordability of electricity is another thing. So no use having access if you can't afford the end products. And we are deeply concerned about how the adoption of nuclear in South Africa will affect the pricing path. So to the Minister, I just ask if she might just clarify for us again the question, why was the IRP 2013 scrapped? Thank you, Chair, in terms of that. Okay, if I might, I would just like to also ask the Minister to please give us some time or date where she will address the issues raised at last week's committee sitting, specifically in relation to the five-point plan. As the media are well aware, and everyone in this room is well aware, we found generally the report was insubstantial, it was underwhelming, it lacked data, and it lacked economic analysis, and we're very keen to understand when her department might return with a more formalised report which we can take seriously. Minister, we'd also be keen to understand when the nuclear framework agreements are coming to this committee. The whole nation is sitting on tenterhooks to understand when or how or why we might be pursuing nuclear. The department has been promising us these nuclear framework agreements for some time now, and I know I have one and very eager to see what they are. I'm so eager that I've actually submitted a pay application for the Russian deal. Hopefully the Minister will give us the necessary documentation long before we have to actually go the pay application route. So please, Minister, if you can, we'd be very grateful to take a look at these agreements. And finally, Chair, if the Minister can update us on Grand Inga, apparently it was so urgent to be at Grand Inga last week, she couldn't attend committee to discuss the 5-point plan with us. We were very keen to understand what were the developments in Grand Inga and how these might contribute to resolving the energy crisis in South Africa. Okay, my final question to the department, quite short. The acting director general has made mention of several RFPs that have been issued in the market. Could I please ask that the department make a list of these for the family and provide them to us at the strategic breakaway? It would be of interest to review what RFPs have been put into the market and also specifically the timelines that have been allocated to financial close and the actual rolling out of the ideas contained in the RFPs. If the department could also please update me or just clarify this ILP reference to an RFP 2015. Is the department working on an update? If so, is it going to go to public consultation? Again, also, Chair, there seems to be a new acronym introduced today as NESMO. Is this NESMO's brother? Can we please clarify what is the difference between NESMO and ISMO? Is it the same thing? What are the proposed changes? I see that it should be coming before Parliament in the middle of this year. So again, Chair, we are incredibly interested to see what the Department is planning for breaking up the Eskom monopoly, specifically in terms of generation, liberating generation from transition. And I'll leave my question there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I've got only two questions around the strategic plan of the department. Acting DG, you may have mentioned that some of your challenges is communication, lack of communication. I would propose that maybe in our next meeting, which we're going to have, at least some plans around how you are going to address the issue of communication around the department's work is going to be reflective of your direction in terms of driving the policy space as the Department of Energy. Because you rightly say that South Africa is the only country that has turned fuel cells into electricity for rural communities. But that is not communicated way enough so that people understand. If we are saying this technology has only been done here in South Africa, this is something positive within the energy space. South Africa has also turned coal into fuel. It's not communicated. You know, people just communicate the negative and don't communicate the positive of what the country has done or where the direction the country is heading to. Perhaps some communication plan needs to come to the portfolio committee so that we can advise and see how best can we claim the energy space as yourself, as the department, and us who are overseeing and have the responsibility to do oversight on your own. Bring us the plan, a communication plan that speaks to how you are going to influence and how you are going to have this challenge. The second question is around Program 3, Branch 3, which is the petroleum, which goes to Ms. Matubela. I didn't hear you speak anything around PetroSA and how best its viability and how best to grow its capacity so that it becomes an agent for change and transformation within the petroleum sector. Because as PetroSA should be the one that is claiming the space and driving the transformation agenda, so that at the end of the day, we have a petroleum stake which has its majority on PetroSA. So I would love to understand what are the strategic plan around utilizing PetroSA, because PetroSA is our baby, and we should be in a position to utilize the space and utilize this agent for transformation. The third question, Honorable Chair, is not a question, but it's a comment which I feel as a full member of this portfolio committee. It's something that I should bring forth because it's going to hinder our work in this portfolio committee, and it's going to bring some sort of animosity, because seated here, I would never just keep quiet when an honorable member just comes here, takes us from our portfolio as energy, takes us to different portfolios. We'll be tempted to come into the space and ask ourselves, where are we in here in the space? And unfortunately, if it's done in full view of departments and other people who are here, it will bring some sort of embarrassment. It should not be the way we conduct ourselves as honorable members. I believe we should be exemplary and we should be strategic in our approach. And even in the questions that we ask the department or the questions that we pose to the minister. Because as all of us know that the minister is the employee of the ANC, and I sit here will not hesitate to come into that space and remind honorable members that the minister is not a member of the
committee. Sorry, check my order. Please, the honorable member is trying to support your role. We are clear on what your role is and what our role is. Please, can we refer that to the documentation and the question? Please.
Honorable Makai, I didn't quite hear you.
Chair, suggesting that the Omaka Bella is trying to fill your shoes with the chairman and telling us that we can and cannot call by the committee, which as far as I understand is clearly your lot as the chairperson, and I was hoping that we might return to the question at hand, which we already set, and please advise we are clear whose role is the chairman of the committee. We do not need to reiterate it by fellow honourable member. I was just hoping that you might assist and help us move on. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I come back again to make this comment as a member of the portfolio committee, because I believe as a member of the portfolio committee, honourable member, I've got all the right to speak and to air my views. And one of them is to come into the space and remind ourselves, honourable members, that the minister is not a member of the portfolio committee. So questions that every time will be coming forth and saying the minister is here in this portfolio committee, the minister is not a member of this portfolio committee. Maybe we should then come into the state and remind ourselves what are the three branches that form the state. It's the executive, office, legislature, and then the judiciary. We are in this space. We should not be wanting to bring in people who are the executive to our portfolio committee. Perhaps it's some literature that we need to remind ourselves as honourable members and go refer to now time and again, so that when we come to this portfolio committee, we are able to speak correctly. So, and I believe, honourable chair, without taking time, it's things that we need to bring into this portfolio committee, so that we don't move to and fro and want to just at any convenience throw in and say, minister, the portfolio committee. She's not a member of the portfolio committee. She does not have to come to our portfolio committee all the time. So even if you don't see her for a whole quarter, it's neither here nor there. Those are just my submissions, Chairperson. Thank you.
Oh, another Mahalaya, you are the last one.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I've got a few questions. In the State of the Nation of 2014, the President of the country states that, or alluded to the fact that there is a need for radical transformation of the energy sector to develop a sustainable energy mix that comprises of coal, solar, wind, hydro, gas and nuclear energy. Now, when Mr. Makuvela presented here, he referred to petroleum regulation, which excludes gas and shale gas as well. What's the responsibility of Energy Department if we are going to exclude this? Because the radical transformation where I'm sitting, I believe that Department of Energy must be at the center of ensuring that it's happening and it's achieved. And the President also alluded to the fact that we require a structural transformation change in the manner in which government departments or affected state-owned companies and the industries as a whole address the energy challenges. And now I'm sitting here thinking, what would be the role of PetroSA? Because I believe that PetroSA is one of the entities of Department of Energy. Then if energy to regulate gas and shale gas, what is it that basically we are seeing as government? And lastly, Chair. Chair, I think that there's little we can do about people who never cease to be snowy ghosts. There's little we can do. But what I want to say here is that this committee of energy is totally different from the agriculture committee which the minister served. Here, we practice maximum unity
in whatever we do. We don't insult each other here. We don't attack each other because we believe on robust debates. Agree to disagree. This Honorable Mati here would agree with me. So we are not going to tolerate all these non-legal cells in this committee. I thought that it's important for me as a member of the committee to put that across, because we can unleash whatever we have if people want us to engage on that kind of an attitude in the committee. Thank you.
What is non-legal cells?
Chair, if a person or a politician guided by personal advantage rather than consistent, respectable principles, you can conduct your off for this.
Let's get the responses. Before you minute, we will break certainly at 10 to 1 as per the program. Honorable members. You know, in this committee, we can be as robust as we want to. But we must engage within boundaries, acceptable boundaries of debate. Honorable members have every right to ask any question to the department, the minister, the deputy minister. But we must do so with respect. You know, when the minister is not here, members can say, "Minister, we were not here the last time. Insist you must be here in the committee to give a report." But let's not throw innuendos and aspersions. Because if we do so, members, me sitting here on this chair, you know that we have been saying that the reason we're going for strategic plan is we want to be more effective as a full government to ensure that we can do what the Constitution says we must do effectively. But if we behave in the manner that we do, honorable members, like say the things we say here in the committee, we're going to make it difficult for the committee to function. I want to give over to the minister and to the department to respond, but Honorable Van Dale, this is what I meant. You see, if you do what you did, you're going to invite responses, and this is going to lead to the collapse of the committee, because there are people here who are quite capable of doing the kind of things you do. So we don't want to operate like that. If we try, honorable members, this committee will not function. Please, and I'm not saying that you mustn't ask tough questions. You must ask tough questions as much as you like. But when you do so with some degree of respect for the committee.
I appreciate that.
Minister, can respond and then give to the department. I just wanted to say that there may be overlapping questions to the APP that if honorable members think have not been sufficiently addressed, when we meet on Tuesday, we can come back to them. Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, members. The position of Director General was interviewed last year. The matter is now with State Security for the preliminary vetting before it goes to the Department of Public Service and Administration. You know that the position of a DG is not the final say of the department, but that it goes through vetting as well as finalization through CPSA, which brings it to cabinet. The 5-point plan and the war room, the deputy minister is the political head convening the war room as it reports to the deputy president. The deputy minister is here. I would invite her to say one or two words on that. The other matters, I'm convinced the department is able to answer. If there's still a gap in the answers, I'll come back and answer later. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Apologies for my absence last week again. On the issue of the 5-point plan, I was not sure, I'm not quite sure how much detail was given, but maybe I might just give a little background to say this is actually a program that is being run from the Union Building through the Deputy President's Office. And it includes a number of departments like COGTA, Public Enterprises, National Treasury, and a few others. And the reason it's the yes, I've already said Public Enterprises. And the main function really is not to take away the functions of the different departments, but rather to try and coordinate the efforts of that work. So some of the elements that Dr. Barnard would have referred to in terms of some of the coal ITPs, the coal gen, and all the DOLA issues that are also brought to the war room so that there is coordination with public enterprises and finance, Department of Treasury in terms of that. So I think it becomes a little difficult maybe if we have a committee where we don't include all the others, because then we'll give you bits and pieces from different perspectives. But basically it's more about a coordination mechanism to try and address the current challenge, which is around availability of energy and not getting into the policy space or taking over the role of public enterprises, which is the shareholder for Eskom. So Chairperson, maybe I should just put it at that point and say, once the Deputy President has made the announcements around this and the different departmental roles would be able to come and say, this is our specific role, and then engage with the portfolio committee on that specific aspect, on those specific aspects. I think, thank you.
So that the response to the question. the acting DG.
Thanks to you, Chairperson, honorable members. Thanks for the question.
Honorable Makai, please don't look at me that way. I suspect what you want to say, so can we get all the questions? We'll come back. I suspect you're going to tell me, Chair, the following questions have not been responded to. I want to give the department a chance to respond. We'll come back.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll take the questions actually to post and then act in a way of sharing it with the colleagues here. I think the first one from Honourable Darling around a user pay principle constructivity, in terms of our tariffs, that's what we would tend to do. The principle is a set of principle not only of us, but also what is applied within our regulatory space, and that's what we apply. And in the day, it needs to be that the energy source or energy technology under consideration needs to be sustainable in terms of its delivery. I think that's important. And unfortunately, that will have from time to time, you have to also consider what is your tariff path and determine what is the end tariff you aim at. So cost productivity is not a point productivity. It can also be around a period of productivity. I think we also need to take that consideration. The comments about NERSA and reachability, and I think that would be NERSA, we'll come and discuss that the issue between the two of them. We are taking note of it. But the fuel price and the regulation, and then specifically, I think, the issue about diesel, the ESCOM Honourable Chair, diesel reports to public enterprises and what's happening there is not in line with our policy and what we have dealt with today. So, but the diesel price issue, I think Mr. Makubela can deal with that for us now, that's not regulated. Then on the nuclear one, security, I'll ask Mr. Bongo. Mr. Estration, Honourable Estration, the pipeline, I also leave it with Mr. Kubela. Both the diesel is a repeat. The issue about the new cable program, the cost of that Mr. Mobile will do. The referral to blackouts, Honourable Chair, I think I just want to mention that my comment was in respect of we haven't outlined blackouts. I didn't say anything about blackouts for the future. But up till now, people are using the word expression very reduced. Up till now, it wasn't that, it was load shedding and power frames. Then on the target training, which SOEs? There are six SOEs. And in terms of the priorities, all of them have certain priorities, but I think it's important is that for our medium to long-term requirements, those are the SOEs that we'll target. For instance, on these nuclear waste, is a new regulator. There is some capacity building that will take place. Also in terms of new regulator, in new build program, there will be new requirements in terms of regulation, expertise. Those, if we're venturing into different technologies, those specific technologies we need to make sure we have expertise. Not only one or two, but a whole host of expertise around that. So it's spread all over the SOE that we're Honourable Chair, in the discussion, Tuesday and Wednesday, we will then also reflect on those issues and what they do. So, just in for the inspectors to oversee the facilitation, Mr. Makubela, and then clarification around the RFP 2013 being scrapped, Honourable Chair, that hasn't been scrapped, that hasn't been served before a cabinet, and as you know, it's a rolling process, that's why as a department we're looking at a rolling process to look at what is the latest and we need this department and also have it in our strategy to say what will be then at the it needs to be a 2015 version we need to look at. So it wasn't scrapped. The issue about the 5-point plan I think was dealt with. The framework agreement Mr. Bumble will deal with. Mr. The issue about the Bank Inga. I'm just going to mention on Grand Inga. As all members know, there was the treaty was then ratified by the African Parliament in end of November, and with that, it opened up the whole development of this challenging program. As you can also recall, the certain nation president also made reference to Grand Inga. It's broken down in different phases. Right now we're busy with the establishment of technical work teams between the two countries. As you could also, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the fact that it's a development in a country 4,500 kilometres from us, the civic development, they need to be transnationalised, need to follow a set of routes to different countries. And that those routes is one aspect, but the commercial and technical application is challenging, and the visit to DRC last week was also then follow-up after we as South Africa, as African Parliament, as well as the DRC Parliament have ratified both the treaty and respective parliaments, and this was the first meeting and the ratification at a certain time clause in it within a certain number of days. JC need to meet, and that was falling within those time frames that we had to meet, and the follow-up meeting is then in April in South Africa, where we will then finalize certain decisions around the work groups that have been formed, and in the we as South Africa sought to submit our team, full team members, and have already some members identified, but I thought then also ratified in the meeting we have in April in South Africa. That's a program that we've recited about not only for the continent, but it's something that will really open up the whole continent. And we, Honorable Chair, will also give you updates. If you want to, you can ask for updates, or give you more specific updates on this exciting program. It forms part of the energy mix that we're talking about. The issue about the clarification about the ESMO bill and the ESMO, we're going to bring that bill back in another format, and I think it's just going to be some for us to say that we're busy with it, and we still need to go through the bill processes, and it will be a bill that will address the specific the systems and the market environment in selling into the national grid. In terms of the communication plan, yes, Honourable Chair, for you, we will have such a plan meeting next week, have such one. Around the grid, I will ask Mr. McDonough to deal with that specific SOE. The State of the Nation address, in terms of the radical transformation and the energy mix, I think from our side, it is, we regard it as the State of the Nation address on the list. It's all the energies inclusive. I think I was just asking Ms. Makubara to clarify just the upstream grounds downstream from shale gas and gas. This might be just the understanding there. And the structural transformation of SMEs, I'll ask for Mr. Lloyd Gunther to do with that. And importantly, that those are all the questions on what she. So I should ask Mr. Makubara, Mr. Bailey, and Mr. Bambu, and I'll ask you, Mr. Lloyd Gunther to deal with the respective aspects. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, CJ. The regulation of diesel. In terms of the white paper on energy policy, which is guiding the work that we do, the aspiration was to move towards liberalization of the pricing framework. And so if one looks at diesel, it is used mainly in industry, and they are able, through the bulk buying, able to negotiate better prices. So ideally, we would want to encourage more competition in diesel than actually to regulate. What what I think is happening is the fact that there are different prices at different retail service stations, because it means there is a bit of competition there. The issue of the, I think Dr. Barnard has dealt with the procurement issue, that perhaps that's a matter to be discussed with the relevant entity. But generally, you are able to maximize benefit when you procure in bulk. That has been the experience that we've had. On the pipeline is operational. Currently transporting all the 500 parts per million diesel from the coast to inland. It is operational. What has not happened is then to introduce the other products into the pipeline. The other products still use the old pipeline, which is referred to as the Durban-Johannesburg pipeline. That is also still operational. So we do have some redundancy in terms of the pipelines at this stage. The issue of the inspectors, I think we would really appreciate getting more information on the particular service station. Our inspectors try and get to every corner of the country, and they have a dispensation actually allowed by the DG and the CFO to even use geckos that can reach those deep rural areas. So this is a matter that we can certainly definitely look into. On the, I think the petroversy matter is a fundamental issue that we would request that maybe it be taken into the discussion of next week, because it talks to the how the whole oil and gas framework is structured in the country, and that will take too much of the committee's time at this stage. The targeted training, certainly we can provide a list of a list in terms of who has undertaken which training and so on. I'm hoping I've covered the issue of regulation of shale gas and our involvement there. I think also it's a matter that can take quite some time of discussion, because at the moment it resides in mineral resources.
Does that come back to share this? It's a big issue. I don't remember, I suggest we told at this point. The issues relating to NAFTA, both NAFTA and Petrobras, we should be able to speak to them next week. The issues relating to ESCOM, that is important for us. Honorable members know that because of the money that the Department of Energy allocates to ESCOM, we from time to time call ESCOM here to ask questions. If there are specific things you want to ask of ESCOM, the best thing is that you should ask ESCOM to come to the committee to
speak to them. The is covered. I know that there are two other questions relating to the framework agreement. The second one is the price of nuclear and what the implications for the pricing pipeline in the future. So the department is here next week, so can we take forward those discussions? So Honorable Mahai and then Honorable Hambekala, can we speak, or Honorable Ekdeze? Honorable Ekdeze, the time is 1 o'clock, right? So you're not going to fight with me for breaking the meeting date. Okay. Honorable Makai, Honorable Ekdeze, Honorable
Okay. So I'm happy to have the conversation about the crossing costs at our breakaway, but I do just want to have the question for the Minister about the RP 2013 scrapping and when we will get the new framework agreement. So I've got two simple questions that we can answer in the session. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I thought I'd say something on energy security. That I, ESCOM indicated that they need about 50 billion rand after last year sometime to sustain itself. And it's a concern for me. ESCOM's current balance rating or energy security is based on its cessation financial support from government to sustain itself. It's a very big concern. Thank you.
Chair, mine is just a message. If Minister can just be our conveyor belt, I would be happy. Minister, 5-point plan and the war room. If you are not integrating the discussions on those two into this committee, you will have problems. You can't sit there in the cabinet and coordinate a program or be a coordination mechanism of what we ought to do as this committee. I'm not going to speak for public enterprises, but where I'm sitting, since the war has started, we have seen Eskom outsourcing their responsibilities, and there was even 20-year agreement a year ago to Glencore. Glencore, which is providing zero grade to our country and importing grade one outside the country. So until you come to our level as the cabinet and deputy minister and the deputy president, until you come to our level as the committee, I think we'll be able to work in unison and be able to achieve whatever that we ought to achieve. Because the announcement on specific roles of committees, for me, it begins to say that we don't know our role at this committee. There can't be announcements on specific roles of committee. As a committee, I think all of us, we know exactly what our role is. So at some point, the cabinet should come to us, the people, because at the end of the day, we are the ones who will make sure that whatever the cabinet decides is processed in that very same house we sit in, all of us. So please, take that message to the deputy president. We are not going to be run amok here. We must be part of the decision, afforded an opportunity to contribute to the wardroom, to the wardroom. If it means that our chairperson should go and sit there, so be it. Thank you.
Honourable members, you please. Let's not do this. There are honourable Makai, Tetezen, Masala, we have raised issues. All of those issues we can take them forward. I've noted them. So I know your views about the fact that they can be answered now. But we're missing again next week. So, including the issue about the first and third, can we take it forward next week as a discussion? So, can we close at this point, honourable members? Please, honourable guests, I don't want to fight with you for closing the meeting late. Honourable Pastor, darling, we'll close the meeting late.
Okay. Thank you.